The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So today we come to the final talk in our series on the depth of the body. And we'll talk about how the body can play a role in insight practice. I'm amazed at how fruitful it has been and continues to be to work with the body, both on and off the cushion. Actually, troubles with my body are what got me into meditation. And even after many years, I can say that it just goes deeper and deeper. And the Buddhist teachings support this idea. It is said that practicing with the body in the right way can lead all the way to liberation from suffering. So there's quite a lot of potential there. But to do that, we do need to take a Dharma perspective in looking at the body. Despite living in our body for many years, we may actually know very little about it from a Dharma perspective, because that's not necessarily the usual way we would see it. And we could start to ask questions like, what is the body really? I mean, the sense of the body is so different at different times. Imagine how different you feel when you're hungry, when you're sick, when you're tired, when you're sleeping, when you're meditating, when you're doing a headstand. All of these are very different experiences, right? Is it even correct to say this is the body, much less my body? It seems like it's a different thing from moment to moment. So body practice is wonderful because it can be approached at any level, actually. We've explored a number of them this week. The body is immediately accessible at a top level. And there are times when it's the most obvious part of our experience, but also with certain practices that we do often in meditation, the body can open to deeper and deeper layers. It can become very subtle, and it can eventually reveal new perspectives on experience. So through Dharma practice, we're learning to see the body in new ways. Maybe this is our greatest teacher, and it's very close at hand. You know, our greatest teacher might be right here with us. So the body that we see in the mirror with its eyes and nose and shoulders and skin and hair and that round belly or whatever, it's just one way to perceive it. We're strongly conditioned to see our body in this very conceptual way because we've done that for so long. And that's the support that we get from other people and from society around us. But many of the classical body meditations and contemplations are designed to undermine or break down these habitual concepts that we bring into our experience of the body. And they're actually designed to get us to see things in a different way, not because this top level way or conventional way is wrong, but because it's only one possibility and we limit ourselves if we just use one. So when we do this, we do start to see the body differently. And actually it is more accurate to begin to see the body more experientially. And that opens a path toward wise understanding. The body can be a vehicle through which we start to understand more deeply how things work. So just as we can take an example of what we just did in the meditation, which is the four elements meditation. And if you're interested in where that's found, it's in right in the key instructions that we have on mindfulness. It's in the Satipatthana Sutta, which is MN10. So this practice of the four elements asks us to touch into the experience of the body, which is actually a mixture of different experiences. The ones highlighted are the solidity, liquidity, heat, and motion that are found throughout the body. And these are not fundamentally different from external experiences, those four things which we encounter all the time in the world around us. Here in this cup, I have some water. It has a certain temperature. It moves when I shake the glass cup. So right there, we have the four elements. It's kind of interesting also to consider when I take this water in, at what point does it become part of my body as opposed to outside of my body? Maybe it's already there because it's disappeared, but on the other hand, it's still kind of just in my belly. It's interesting. Where is that dividing line? We don't need to get really philosophically into this, but when we start to look a little bit, just a little bit more carefully, we see immediately that there are questions about where is the division between external and internal. It can get, subtle and not as obvious as we think when we divide things up conceptually into words like internal and external. Those are nice words, but what are they, and where do they really shift from one to the other? Where are the boundaries around those? Not so clear when we look in experience. We also see that these things are shifting and changing. You know, there's continual change about what's internal and external and breathing every moment. So we can start to see the inconstancy and impermanence and changingness of the body and experience and internal and external and all of this. So this leads to important insights, even at this very basic level of experience, into anicca, impermanence or inconstancy, and then also toward anatta, not self. I mean, really, what part of this is yours? So this is worth exploring because it's an area of a lot of suffering. So all of this is beginning to take what I'm calling a Dharma perspective on the body. So we meet the actual experience of the body rather than various concepts that we have about it. We start to ask questions around those edges, just to play a little bit with what are the ways that our concepts might be restricting us. So we also have concepts like knee or back, usually when we're talking about pain, my knee hurts. So as Joseph Goldstein says, he's one of our elder insight teachers, he says, there's no sensation called knee. And it's true, right? If you look into what is the knee that is hurting right now, there isn't one experience called knee. It's a concept, it's an idea of some part of the body. But when we look at the actual experience, we will see that even that pain is, it's tension, it's heat, it's pulling, it's sharpness. There are words that are much more specific than pain, which is a concept. So we can start to meet our experience more at that level, grounding ourselves in actual sensations. And we'll find that our experience of that pain differs, than our response to it, and our possibilities of how we can be with it also open up when our mental image of it opens up a bit. So what we're learning is some flexibility around experience. And this has a lot to do with freedom, with having a freer response than when we can only be locked into one way of seeing things. So as we then going on, as we experience the body as ever changing from moment to moment, it's very natural to begin to understand that the body is not going to last forever in this form. It's quite finite. Certainly it's undergone a lot of change to get to the point where you are now. Isn't your body very different than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, if you're old enough, 50 years ago, 60. Yeah, of course, very different, and it will continue to be different. That's called aging. And of course, it's finite. Eventually, something will end there. Yes, so it's interesting and important to begin contemplating in these directions. We do it gently. You know, everybody's in a different place around how they want to approach the finiteness of the body. But one of the easiest ways that we can start turning our mind in this direction is simply to notice endings of all types. So we can, you know, actually everything ends. Our normal way of perceiving, not our Dharma way of perceiving, is that we like beginnings. And so we rush on to the next thing that's beginning. We prefer what is new and young to what is old and decaying. And so we start to notice things that are decaying or ending in very simple ways. We can do it externally, internal, external, you know. So we can notice leaves dropping from the trees, for example. Fall is beginning, isn't it? So flowers wilt. We can also notice the gatherings of friends come to an end. So, you know, pause to recognize endings. Just begin to flavor the mind with this notion that there are beginnings and there are endings. And it's beginning to take a very simple Dharma perspective on life, realistic, seeing the reality of how things actually are, coming and going. There are times when it will be challenging to stay with reflections like this. And if that's the case, you don't have to. But it's fine to maybe touch into this from time to time, you know, to consider that the body is going toward a certain end at some point. And we may need patience to really take in the reality of the body, its ever-changingness and its finitude, and of course its impersonality in the end. These can be a little bit challenging to see into. Sometimes we can have the sense, whoa, is this what I signed up for? Yes, it is. That we have this body. So truly, the body is our friend. You know, it's always in the present moment. It's always honest. The mind can be very tricky, but the body is pretty honest. And it gently but persistently serves as a very deep Dharma teacher. Our closest teacher is very close at hand. And who could ask for a better friend? So just as we talked about in the first talk this week, Venerable Ananda, the attendant of the Buddha, said, there's no friend like mindfulness of the body. So I hope that you maybe have gained some deeper appreciation of the depth of the body and its potential, its power in our Dharma practice. If we want to learn about how things work and gain the kind of wisdom that will help us live well in the world and really serve the world well. Wow, the body is a great vehicle, a great teacher for that. So perhaps you will honor your body in some way today. What a gift it is that we have this teacher for the short time that we do. So much appreciation for your presence in your Dharma practice. And I wish you all very well. Thank you.